Thank you. Pei tes tes. Haloichesh alamaka. Somebody who says a sentence, he whispers words over an injury. V'kayre pasuk. And he reads a pasuk as a remedy. Afilu b'loshen laz. Even if he says so in a foreign language. We'll skip the parentheses temporarily. V'chein ha'kayre alatinuk. Somebody who says a pasuk on a child. Shalo yivas. It's a skula that he should not become frightened. He puts the svarim near a child or tefillin so he should fall asleep. Not bad enough that they're over on the averis of magic. There are also people who are, rebelling against the Torah, Shem Eisen Devei Torah Refuah Saguf. They're turning words of Torah into objects of healing. Veinam Ela Refuah Sanefesh. And they're meant to be spiritual healing. Shenemar, V'yiyu Chayim L'Nafshecha, and they give life to your life. 1 minute, V'davka Shekvar Nifka Atinik. And that's only if the child is already injured. Aval Hivri, but you're allowed to say, you can say it when he's sick too, but the point is, the custom is when he's well to say psukim as a hagana, that's fine. So what it's saying here is the magical incantations that use psukim are worse than the magical incantations that don't use psukim, because you're not supposed to use psukim as a means of healing. The Rambam, I think, says this on the Mishnah, you're not supposed to make Torah into a kardaim lachbarbar. You're not supposed to use it into a tool, with which you dig, so to speak. Now this is a controversial issue, the issue of saying psukim. It depends really on the kavanah of the person saying it. When the person saying a pasuk as a eschus, when we were kids we knew that if you walk in the street and you say lecha, B'nei Yisrael, Le'echos Kel L'Shayna, the dogs wouldn't attack you. And what do you know? All my life, a dog never attacked me. Baruch Hashem. Actually, it happened once, but it generally doesn't happen.
But
so,
it happened to me, I said Shema Yisrael. I can never remember the pasuk.
You said Shema Yisrael? Okay.
They just
do it. I couldn't remember the pasuk, I said. But anyway, this is the thing. I think everyone agrees to the basic idea, and the dispute is the application. The idea that you could use psukim as for the schus of limud haTorah or the schus of what it means that you can do, but to use it as a magical protection that you cannot do.
I think it's
what? That's objects of kedusha. I'm not familiar with it. There is something similar, which I don't know. It must come from Kabbalistic sources. It says if a woman goes to a mikveh at night, her husband is not in the city, so there's an idea of putting a sakin under the pillow.
What?
There's an idea of putting a knife under a pillow. Let me. how do you divide? Okay. Let me. I don't remember if I discussed this with you. There's a one of the.
Did they get from Shaul's daughter?
No, Shaul's daughter.
Did they get the sword?
Where did they keep the sword?
Yeah, probably been lying.
Oh, probably been lying.
That's a different story. Yeah.
I know. It's the same topic.
You can't. No, no.
No,
I'll tell you.
All right.
Okay, I mentioned to you last time, I'll try to explain this. I mentioned to you last time that natural refuah is permitted, obviously. Segula refuah is permitted. A magical refuah is not permitted. The question is, why make something a segula? And what makes it a refuah? And what makes it a magic? What are the three? So refuah is something that has some physical properties. If there's anything physical, you can use it. You can take an aspirin. If you believe an aspirin helps for heart attacks, you can take an aspirin. Does it really? Doesn't it? It doesn't matter if it really does. It's something physical that you're taking. Well, the magnets, well, they work or they don't work. The point is, there's something physical about a magnet. You can prove, you can measure that magnets have some quality. The issue is things that have no physical, measurable qualities to them. What's the difference? So what is quoted is a tshuva of a psak of the Urayim, and the Chidah follows it. And the way it's quoted, and I'll tell you how it's misquoted, the way it's often quoted is that the Urayim says, you can assume everything is a segula and permitted, unless you have a reason to say it's not permitted. In other words, generally, you know, the barbarish school is, you're allowed to do. You know, you don't step over a baby because it'll stop growing, or you, which other things I never remember. All the things that the babas had, that they passed down. So, what? You don't sew a button while you're wearing it. Yes, you shouldn't stick yourself. But, all these things, that the babas handed down. So they're mutter. You know, unless you have a reason to say that it's also. That's the way the Urayim is quoted. And the Chidah is quoted. There's a tshuva in the Ben Ish Chai, about what apparently was a minig in Iraq, that when a baby gave birth, they would take a spear and two chicken legs and stick the two chicken legs into the end of the sharp end of the spear and put that over the bed of the, well secured, over the bed of the woman who gave birth. So the Chidah was asked if that's Darkei Amayri, if that's Kishuf or not. So he says that the Urayim's rule is the following. Anything that was known in the time of the Gemara that the Gemara doesn't mention is permitted. In other words, if we can show that this existed in the time of the Gemara, and this particular one is mentioned in a Braisa, it existed in the time of the Gemara, and the Gemara doesn't prohibit it, therefore it's mutter. That's the actual quote of the Chidah and the Urayim and the Ben Ish Chai. New things, it's no raya. So I believe the Ben Ish Chai writes, the Rav Palim, is if something comes down from generations of Jews, even for two generations, three generations, the assumption is that it has a makar. The assumption is, if the Makar is meaningful or not meaningful, but it has some type of a Jewish origin, and we have a right to assume it's not Darkei Hamayri. If it comes through the Chinese or the Japanese or the Italians or the Greeks, then this rule doesn't apply. It's the Yiddish, what we used to call the Babarish superstitions, that they're not also because of Darkei Hamayri. Okay, those things that the grandmothers did, is not us because of Darkei Amayri. Other things, maybe. So it's a misquote to say that they're not. So getting back to what we're talking about, the things that have some sort of a Jewish makar. I mean, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. I mean, in the first year of Shulchan Aruch, the Shach says that when you walk out, you touch a mezuzah, you say, Hashem Yishmar Tzeskov Yechav Yatav Yadayim. You sing a pasuk for Shmirah. But it has a makar to say it, and the words have meaning, and it's okay. But somebody that doesn't have any Jewish makar, that's where the issues go, or if we know it's a not good makar. My recollection is that the Kaf HaChayim does bring in Hilchis Muktzah. It's actually in Hilchis Tefillin, but regarding Hilchis Muktzah, the custom of putting Tefillin near a bed so that Shadim don't start up with you. And why does he say it? Because in Hilchis Muktzah, it talks about handling Tefillin. It's a klisha malach del iser. You don't handle Tefillin. You mean for what? If Tefillin are getting ruined, you're allowed to handle them anyway because they're Dvarim Shebikdusha. So what's the limitation? He said the limitation on Hilchas Mukta is putting it near your bed so the Shaydim don't start up on Shabbos. But he certainly implies that it's mutter otherwise.
So,
that in some communities they had such a custom. The Chayyeh Chachmas Adam is not a Sephardi. He doesn't have such a custom.
So these words that he says, Shehem Olsen, Divrei Torah, Refuas Aguf.
Right. It's Refuas
Aguf. That has implications for the way we say Tehillim, no?
No, because we say Tehillim as a tefillah. As a way of davening to the Rabbi Nishor.
I think a lot of people say Tehillim think that it's, they're saying it so the person should have a Refuas.
They're saying it's a tefillah to God, should have a Refuas. They think the words somehow bring about a refuah, then you're right, then that's incorrect.
So what kavanah are you supposed to?
You're supposed to daven to God, you're not supposed to daven to the Tillim. If you believe the Tillim has its own power, that's really Avodah Zarah.
Because I remember once the Rav said that when you say Tillim, you're supposed to be davening for the right outcome. You're not supposed to be
davening.
So that kind of comes.
Yeah, but you're davening to Hashem for the right outcome. You're davening to God for the right outcome.
But you want a refuah.
You're allowed to daven for it. It's just not a good idea. It's a good idea to ask for that the midas harachamim should prevail. It's interesting. In some circles, they put the Raziel HaMalach book in the crib of a baby when till the bris. There's a book which is alleged, which it's a forgery, but there's alleged to come from Raziel HaMalach. Raziel HaMalach mentioned in the time of Adam Rishon. And he had the Razeh Kael, he had the secrets of God. And there's a book called Raziel HaMalach. They print it very small, you really can't read it, but they put it there for a refuah. Some people have it in their house for a refuah.
Now, preventing a fire.
A fire. So, you're right, it is for preventing a fire. I'll tell you how I remember.
What?
Because it's a forgery. The whole Raziel HaMalach is a chapter of a sefer, I believe, from the Levush. Word for word taken out from there. And they call it Raziel HaMalach. It's a total forgery. And, Reb Tzadik HaKayin writes it.
The
Chassidus are, they write, I think it's in the Munkash, in the Divrei Torah, says they say it prevents fires. We had a Mokach, a fire, and it got burned together with the rest of the house. That's what I think you're right. Definitely it's written. I think it's Raziel. It's regarding Raziel HaMalach. So it's, there's no question. It's a forgery. It's not, Chassidim write it's a forgery. It's other Christ. It's a
picture of a rabbi.
Yeah, that's such a bizarre to me. Someone hung it up in the office in Tar Vadas. A rebbe, they use it to hang very nice.
They said it worked. I had a patient who directly sent
this to
the
Kabbalah
and said that it worked.
Sure works. It might work. It's such a bizarre to the rabbi to use this picture for the mice, in my opinion.
Okay.
You should buy it to keep the mice away.
No, I'm talking about back to the other one.
The Raziel HaMalach. It's an absolute forgery. There's no question in the world that it's a forgery. You can read it word for word.
Some guys, because they were given in a shiur, and he should buy it, right?
The what? Menorahs? I don't know. I can't tell you. They're called bumpers. So the baby shouldn't bang. It's a school and the baby shouldn't bang his head.
I don't know. There's got to be two sides of this.
I don't think so.
With the Kabbalah, this woman told me that he was in his power 1 year when the problem was acute with the mice and it worked. From there, they probably extrapolated and they put pictures up. That's a bubble mice. But the Kabbalah itself,
why does it hurt? So stand on your head and why does it hurt? Okay. Alright, Yud.
Red Bindish,
I want you to know the Red Binda Minig. He was, what was his name? He played second base for the Yankees. He was on a hitting streak. He was an Italian guy. He had the Red Binder, but it's supposed to be tied into the underwear. Soda to the underwear. That's the Italian meaning. And he had a hitting streak. He wouldn't change his underwear for. Okay, let's go further. Yes. So he tied a red bindle around it. It's good for Ayanar. It's good for Ayanar.
Okay.
It wasn't Joe DiMaggio. It was a guy who had the. Okay. All right, let's go on to Yud. Mechukas Hagoyim is the custom of non-Jews, litzdar al amesim, to have such pain on the death of beloved relatives, v'litloy saron, to the degree that they pull their hair, v'lisroit bibsaron, l'saret bibsaron, and scratch their skin, machmas tsar, because of the pain. V'oysa zeh, hari zeh loika mishum, v'seret l'nefesh loisitnu. And somebody who does that gets malchus. You're supposed to be mitzdar on the passing of a patira, but in a measured way. Mitzorach lizor v'zeh hanoshim, shal yitlushu saris reisham, and especially women who tend to become more emotional have to be warned not to pull out their hairs. Shema yavayli de karcha. They'll come to the aveira of liichu karcha. V'yeshayim v'shtei saris chayiv. Some say even if you don't make yourself bald, you pull out two ears, you chayav b'seirech, and upon him, isura ika. V'gam anoshim usores alav zeh, and women too are commanded in this law, ala srita, ala meis, chayiv, al shartzar. If somebody rips on a meis, he's chayav malchus, al shartzar, isura miya ika. If he's a mitzar, the market went down, and he's mitzar, and he scratches himself, isura miya ika. There's a kasha. The Gemara says, Rabbi Kiva, on the death of, help me, Rabbi Eliezer, he pulled out hairs. So the Kasha, I think Tais says the Kasha, how's he allowed to do it? So it says he did it on the Torah that was lost. Right. Not on the person, but on the Torah that was lost. So on the Torah that was lost, you could do it.
Strange. It looks like Mitzvah.
Yeah, maybe Rabbi Kiva is Rabbi, maybe it was different, I don't know. But anyway, this is the, it's interesting. La'isu to sarata should be a type of b'chukasem le'selecho. I don't know. It said that le'selecho has to be something that has no explanation. I'm sure, right? And the iser of chukas ha'akum, we said either pritzos of a dezara or something that's maybe it is a ma'aseh tipshus.
Same would be allowed to be flawless, right?
Maybe.
What about women who pull out facial hair for cosmetic reasons?
Their facial is perfectly fine. But yeah, because of tsar, it's also, you're allowed to pull it out for any other reason. A yod alef, oid, mechukeseyem, shi hayu sartin al basaram, umemalin aseret min seva. This is the issur of tattooing, which is only if it has two parts. A tattoo has to have a loch of a tattoo, it means you scratch, and you put coloring, oidyoi, or ink, or shetzevei atchila v'akach sayret, you put the ink first and the sweet the second. Ha'isik hechay malchus. Doing a tattoo is chiyah malchus, exiv, sevas kaka, lesitnu v'sarchem. U'mekal malchay mutta litenei for makla. You're allowed to put ash, b'shar dover al makla refua. Now when you have a wound, the skin is open, and they used to put an ash as a healing. Now sometimes when a afopishia nisha harasham, when the skin closes, it traps some of the ash, and it's like a tattoo. You could tell he's not doing it because of chukas hagayim, and therefore, tattooing is aser, but when you don't do both, a srita, the cut is there already, you put in the ink. That's a different story. I had mentioned once that I once spoke at Shal Shudis about tattooing, and Dr. Leb came over to me, he says, oh yeah, I just realized I do tattooing for a living. I said, really, Avi? I didn't know you have a second job. He said, no, when he does a colonoscopy, if he finds a growth, he uses India ink to mark the area of the growth for the surgeon. So the surgeon should know, and that's a...
inside, not on the
inside, yeah.
So who says
which way or the other? So Rechaim Kanievsky has a sefer on tattoos. Everything you ever wanted to know about tattoos and then some. And in there, he has the shayla, you're allowed to tattoo the inside of the body. And he says it's mutter. Why? Because the Gemara Tesefta, I don't think it's a Gemara, Tesefta he brings, says that you're not allowed to tattoo the inside of your mouth, because when you open your mouth, it's visible. So we see from there that only, because when you open your mouth, it's visible, otherwise it'll be mutter. So he's matir. Amazing that the Shaila should actually...
He doesn't
like
the
Paschal. Who? He Paschals all the time.
What?
He Paschal, he was not Paschal, he's telling you it all locha, that's all. It's based on a Bryce. Okay. All right, Thursday night we continue. Mitzvah Shabbat.